you. It's 10:05. I'd like to call the May 22nd Pension Committee to order. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the February 20th, 2014 minutes. Are there any questions, concerns, or changes to those minutes? Hearing none, they will stand approved. The next item is to welcome our new Pension Committee member, Kathleen Ryan.
Good morning.
She's a certified financial planner and is the president of KMR Financial Network. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Third item is Mr. Schoen is here to talk about the investment analysis for the quarter ending March 31st, 2014.
And when I stepped into Gina's office, she said, I said, any words of wisdom? She said, keep it brief. And I said, I'll see, you should be glad you don't pay me by the word. So go to tab one. Actually, what you're going to see is two different stories. One is the pension fund pension. A fabulous, fabulous quarter. And the 1-, 3-, and 5-year returns have been great. And the OPEB, you'll see for the quarter, the numbers aren't going to look as good. But you're going to see since the change that you did that was implemented in mid to late January, those returns actually have done better than the pension. So the path is looking very good there also. So going to tab one, just a couple key things to note is the economy is moving along. It's moving along positively, but it's at a, you know, relatively slow pace. And there's still a lot of concern about, you know, what's going on in Russia. Will that affect Europe, and will then that affect us? You saw interest rates go down this quarter, which all the brightest minds and some of the not as bright minds said interest rates have to go up. We were of the same camp that we thought interest rates had to go up. I think you'll see the trend will be that they have to go up. But the path isn't always straight up. It's not always straight down. It's one of these approaches. So we saw interest rates actually come down, even at a time which you'll see on the bottom of page two, during the, I'll call it the easing of the easing. So the quantitative easing, the Fed is pulling back on the amount of their bond purchases. So the wisdom was, well, therefore, interest rates should go up. Of course, they went down. They went down because there's still the concern that the economy may slide backwards, and that the effect of the easing of the easing was already baked into the cake last year in the third quarter. If you recall, interest rates took a pretty strong jump upwards. From a relative basis, when I say relative to other funds, because that's one of the things you like to look at, relative to your indices, when interest rates went up, on a relative basis, that was better for you because you're more conservative than, frankly, just about any other plan out there that I see. You have a shorter duration, a higher credit quality. When interest rates came down, although that was positive and you got a positive returns, relative to others was not as big an impact, okay? And that's going to be the nature of how you want to invest it, okay? The only other thing I'd show you on these two pages, on page one, if you go to the graph on the or chart on the bottom right-hand side, you see light vehicle sales. You can see since 2009, it's been a very steady increase, light vehicle sales being cars and small trucks. So the good news, it's been a very positive, you know, steady climb upwards. But at this point, it's still only back to what the historic average has been over the last 20 years. Okay, so it's really been more climbing out of the trough than forward movement. Page three. You'll see on there that, and the gray is the one year ending at the end of March, quarter ending as the first quarter. The U.S. equities for the year were up 22.6%. Obviously, very strong, strong returns, more so than any of us had expected. U.S. equities still had a positive quarter this year, which after a very strong last year, 2013, and a fairly strong 2012, you know, we'd expect maybe some retrenchment. And there was in January. The market did go down in January, but bounced back up in February and a little bit also in March. Total return of up 2%, which is close to historic norms. Over time, you should expect equities to do about 10%. And that averages out to 2.5 per quarter. Equities, U.S. equities are up 2%. International equities were positive, but just barely positive. However, since the end of February, international equities have significantly outperformed U.S. equities. So the trend, even though you see right now, as of the end of March, U.S. equities were ahead, actually year-to-date, international is now up ahead. And emerging markets, which everybody usually expects, including ourselves, that in strong equity markets, emerging markets would do better. When they're down more. Well, emerging markets have done worse, significantly worse, even negative. You have just a very little exposure to emerging markets. I say, unlike most plans, which have a specific allocation to emerging markets, you do not, but you allow your managers to go into those areas. So through the pension plan, you actually have a higher allocation to emerging markets than you do through the OPEB, because the state goes higher into emerging markets. And we'll talk about that a little bit, about how the state, you know, has the positions that piece of the pension portfolio. So I mentioned earlier, fixed income, very good quarter. Bonds up 1.8%. That's because interest rates went down. High-yield bonds, i.e. junk bonds, even stronger, and international bonds also. Inflation-sensitive investments, which do better when the expectation of inflation will increase, upwards strongly this quarter. Not that there's expectation of high inflation, but expectation that inflation will increase relative to where it had been. Okay. Still, having said that, the market has a way of measuring it. It's this difference between the yield on nominal treasuries and TIPS, and that's what the market is saying inflation they expect it to be. And even then, it's said expected for the next 5 years to be about 1.75%, and for 10 years to be about 2.25%. That's significantly below historic norms, which have run, you know, long periods of time, about 3% over the last 50 years, more around 3.5, 3.75. Okay. On page 4, the key to take out of this is that everything's on the positive side, and the both the, whether for the year or the quarter, whether it's large, mid, or small cap, the big winner this quarter was mid-cap value. Value outperformed growth, whether it was in large, mid, or small. You do have a little bit of tilt toward the value side on your OPEB fund by design, and some tilt toward the mid-cap. So the timing was turned out very well. When we repositioned things, we actually put a little bit more into mid-cap in your portfolio, which happened late January. I won't say that was while we had divine inspiration. We like mid-cap over longer periods of time. We like having a little bit more mid-cap than the benchmarks would have. You know, I call it the Goldilocks, not too big and not too small. Okay. And the only last thing I'll say on market and environment is you go to the bottom of page 6, you can see the yield curve. The green line curve was the yield curve, treasury yield curve, 1 year ago, March 31st. The left-hand side being short term, you see the 1MO, that's 1 month treasuries, really bills. And over on the right-hand side is 30-year treasuries. So what you can see, the green being a year ago, the gold being at the end of December, and then the blue being at the end of this March, is that interest rates went up quite a bit from March to December of last year, and on the longer end of the curve came back a little bit because of expectations of maybe a little dampening of inflation. Okay. Page 7 and 8 has a lot of numbers in there. And then if you go on to the next tab, specific observations about your pension fund. For the quarter, you gained $1.69 million net. We'll round it to $1.7 million. When it says net, that's net of the investment management fees. Okay. For the year, $8.5 million net. That equates to a 2.5% gross return and a 14.3% gross return. You might say, well, Michael, why do you put net on the one side and gross on the other side? Two reasons. One is because when we do universe comparisons against, we show you against other public funds throughout the U.S., those are grosser fund universes. And also, because we're still working on a couple issues with the state of trying to find what they're calling, they tell us, they show us what their gross return is, they show us in the page they give for you what the expenses are, so we actually then have to gross that up to what we call a true gross, okay? That ends up to be about 10 basis points. But we know that can't be valid because they've already told us that their fees are 70 basis points. So we have an email and a call into them. We just haven't heard back from them yet of saying, okay, help us figure out, are there really three numbers here, a gross, and a net. So right now we're just showing you gross until we get better clarification from them, okay? Having said that, you'll see that however we defined it, you had extremely strong returns for the quarter for the pension fund. What caused that? Actually, all your managers. DuPont, if you remember DuPont Capital, you hired, I think it was 3 years ago, almost going on 4 years maybe now, they manage a large cap core domestic equity product for you. They've had very strong returns for the quarter, 1 year and 3 years. The state also had very good returns. What drove the state's returns is that they had their private equity, venture capital, and hedge funds had very strong Februaries, okay? We think that's probably a reflection. Hedge funds and private equity don't get marked to market on a daily basis. They get valued really several weeks after the end of the quarter. So we think the reason why we saw that in February was really reflecting what happened, you know, during the course of the whole quarter, the previous quarter. So, something to keep in mind. Do note that almost 20% of the state's money that they manage and 60% of your money is with the state is in private equity, venture capital, and hedge funds, okay? 25% of their money is in fixed income. I note that because your investment policy statement calls for 60% equities, 40% fixed income, okay? The state's benchmark is to be 60-40 also. But right now, they're closer to 75-25, okay? So that means your overall plan has a higher allocation than that 60%, okay? You're probably closer to about 65% equities. Just be aware of that. Now the state, it's just the way they manage it. You know, they will sometimes go much lower in equity, sometimes they go over, they will make these tactical decisions. Those tactical decisions worked well this past quarter and this past year. But be mindful of that. It's why you have the other pieces elsewhere to help offset, because in and of itself, at least in my opinion, the state plan is more aggressively managed than where Sussex County wants to be. But you then supplement that with the other 40% so that the two of them get you to where you want to be, okay? Fidelity also had a very good quarter, typically, they do better in down markets, not as well in up markets, but this was actually for small cap, it actually was a down market. Okay. Looking ahead, need to adjust the investment policy statement. We started that conversation about 6 months ago, and I think the desire is today, hopefully, move that forward. And also, I'd like to have a little bit of discussion, both on this plan and the other plan, about, you know, cash. You carry a fair amount of cash in your plans because of the way the money is contributed. It all comes in at the end of the year, okay? And then it takes a little bit of time, and then you actually took one step and said you've moved it over to Wilmington Trust to put in a laddered treasury portfolio, a one-year laddered treasury portfolio. But relative to your policy index doesn't show any cash in it. So sometimes there can be some real divergence between what your returns are versus what your policy index is because of that. Okay, this past quarter, it was really sort of a drag on returns because you had cash, you know, close to 7% cash in the OPEB fund, and I think it was 4 or 5% in this, and cash underperformed fixed income. Other periods of times, it can diverge, you know, go the other way for you. I think we might want to build in, you know, a little target for cash in your overall investment policy also for both plans, okay? Because the reality is you're going to have that. Now, the second issue around that is the timing of the cash, because right now, all of it's coming in at one time, okay? And that might be the way it has to be done, okay? But I raise the issue, what it does is it just raises a little havoc sometimes in trying to match up to your policy index, because sometimes you're going to have 7% cash, and then it gets down to zero, you know, and so how to, you know. So what some of our clients do is they actually just put the money in on a monthly basis, so it goes in and goes out instead of going in, then parking in treasuries, and then going out. So just, okay.
Could you say just a touch more about that? So I see on page 13, or rather it's 14, that there's, at the end of March there was $3.6 million in cash, right, on page 14 there? Am I reading that right? And the Wilmington Trust short-term?
Short-term, bond, yeah, because that's all less than a year. It's not a money market, but it is in like 3, 6, 9, 12-month treasuries, which we would consider to be cash.
And so is that pending deployment into these other buckets, or?
No, because that'll be used, because there'll be cash outflow during the course of the year of, you know.
The same amount.
About the same amount.
This is to pay the actual pension cost that we have for the year.
Yeah.
Instead of doing it on a monthly basis and pulling it out of our pension, we'll put it in short-term securities to mature in June, and then we pay the pension fund with this amount, because they mature in 12 months.
You pay it all out in June?
In June.
Put it in December,
we put it in
and then
pay
it
out in June. Yep.
So if operationally that's the best way to do it, then I would like to have an investment policy statement that there's a part of the fixed income is actually really cash, you know. So we carve out, you know, in this case it's 3.5, you know, of something that's about 5%. You'll go really from about 5% cash down to zero, so maybe a target of 2 or 3% cash as part of the investment policy statement to, I think, more closely recognize how things are handled.
A few years ago we used to pay the pension fund every month, mm-hmm. with this fund, and it would pay down quicker. I think the thought was to make them put them in something that could earn a little more interest a little bit longer and hold it there until June instead of withdrawing the money to get a greater return was the purpose of that.
Sure. Yeah. And when interest rates go up, which someday it will,
yeah.
that there'll be greater benefit to that. So, but since operationally this is the best thing for you, it sounds like, then I just think we should recognize it in the investment policy statement then. So instead of having 40% targeted to fixed income, we make it like 37.3. And when we get to the investment policy statement, you know, we can talk. Okay. Just a couple of things. So I'll use the term, let's celebrate the success on page 16. You'll see that for the quarter, now remember, this is just a quarter, you know, your return was 2.5%, and that ranked your plan in the top 3% of all the public funds that are in the, you know, we among 45 different other firms, pull all of our data. We have a firm that, you know, Investor Force that's data. But it's over 200 plans, and you guys were in the top 3% for the quarter, 15% for the year, top 25% for the 2 years, and top 26% for 3 years. So those are, you know, for a conservatively managed fund, that's even says even more, because the more aggressive funds, the ones that had higher allocation to equities, were the ones that did better over the last 3 years because equities have done so well. Okay. Now, the question would be to say, okay, so what caused that? Well, as I mentioned earlier, for the quarter, each of the managers have done well. But if you go on to page 18.
Could I go?
Sure.
On,
oh, yeah,
one
sure.
Thing on 16.
Yeah.
It has returns since inception or since January of 2009.
Mm-hmm.
That's an average of 12% a year.
That is correct.
Good.
That is good. Yeah. Just, but also remember, the market hit its bottom at the end of mid-March of 2009. So
it's been rising.
It's been rising. So we need to be cautious that when it's gone like this, It may not necessarily go down like this, but we believe the rate of growth over the next 5 to 10 years is going to be, you know, you're going to be hard-pressed to meet 7.5% returns, you know, quite frankly. Just think, if bonds are yielding 2 to 2.5%, well, 40% of your portfolio will probably do about 2 to 2.5%. And stocks, even if they do their historic norm of 10, that doesn't get you to 7.5, okay? And we would suggest that we think that over the next 10 years, stocks are probably going to do more like 7.5-ish, you know, because you captured a lot of gains the last couple of years. So just be, you know, mindful of that, okay? But yes, not to dampen things, yes, 12% is still great. It obviously improves the funded status of the plan. It drives down the arc, and it's been over, you know, that's a five and a quarter year time period. So it's many years of that additional compounding above and beyond what your assumed rate of returns were. Okay. So if you go to page 18, and I'm going to start at the 3 year mark on purpose, the total fund did 9.4%. And I'll go down to the bottom and say the state did 9.2%. So it wasn't the state carrying a day, although the state did very well. It was your other pieces also actually cumulatively did better to bring you up to 9.4. You look at the quarter, it's the reverse. Your plan did 2.5, the state did 3. So the rest of your portfolio did very well, but the state had a very extraordinary quarter. And actually, even for the year, your total fund at 14.3 and the state did 14. So pretty close to each other. The point of all that is that I think it's the combination of that you've got the state who will go into more aggressive areas. They can do that with a plan of that size and the way they can budget for themselves. Gives you exposures to areas that normally a plan your size, I would not suggest you do. Okay, and then you've modulated that with, you know, what you've done on the other pieces, more conservative pieces. So where's the press when you want to tell them that you're in the top 3%? but the problem is the day when you're not. So on page 19, and the last thing on the pension until we get to the IPS, your overall fees are at 0.56%. I will tell you that is higher than any of our other clients. Okay, our clients' average, the lowest is about 0.23%. That's extremely low. Most of them are upper 30s, lower 40s. Okay, the reason why your fees are where they are is because the states are more expensive. When you have private equity and you have hedge funds, those expense ratios are going to be higher. What you're seeing here are gross returns, not net. So you'd have to, I'd say, compared to some of our other clients, you'd have to notch you down just a little bit. It's not that much. It's still extraordinarily good returns. But just be aware that that's part of what comes with the state plans. You're going to have a little bit more expense, but you have exposure into areas that you wouldn't normally. And that comes along with that. Okay. You seem like you might have a question.
Fidelity, they're very high also. Is there a certain length of contract that we have Fidelity on? Are they?
So Fidelity is... and that's something that's been part of the structure for long before we showed up. It is a small cap manager. So small cap managers will typically be, you know, higher than, well, they're small cap equity. So they're going to be higher too. It is a mutual fund. So you know, you can get out anytime you want to. It's just that the performance has been good enough, you know, to offset those fees. And if you go to another small cap manager, it's still going to pay, you know, pretty high fees unless you indexed.
Right. That's what that was my follow-up question. Had they considered using indexes in that space?
I think they, if Fidelity didn't outperform net of fee basis, they would, and we surely would not be opposed to that. You know, I think to date, because their returns have been enough to offset that. You know, but I would not be opposed to that conversation at some point. So.
Because small caps have sort of run their course, so I think maybe it might be time to look at indexing again.
Yeah. Well, but although I would see that as two issues. One is, do you lower your allocation to small cap? And I agree with you. I think small cap has had quite a run, okay? A separate issue is the exposure you have to small cap. Should it be an indexing or should it be an active manager? So this would be typically considered more of a, I'm going to use the term, retail-type mutual fund. It's not an institutional mutual fund, but something you've had for a long time, and it's turned out it's actually done well, but, you know, surely be something we could talk about.
Okay.
One more question on that. If we were in an index fund, just looking at the history, would we be at the Russell 2000 level on an index fund? Would that be the expected return?
Most probably. It depends on which index fund you chose, but yeah, I would say that. Or actually one that we would look at would be there's what are called SMID, okay? And that would be the Russell 2500 that we look at. So and Vanguard's got about anything you want to look at, you know, Vanguard's got. So whether an ETF or a mutual fund, that you know. That could give you some more exposure into the mid-cap space, which, as you know, we like that, you know, as a, you know, maybe a little bit of added exposure to that area. One thing Fidelity has done for you that an index fund would not is Fidelity tends to outperform in the down markets. If you get an index fund, it's not designed to outperform or underperform in an up or down market. It's supposed to do 100% of its benchmark either side of it. So what you would give up is maybe a little bit of protection on the downside. That would be the trade-off. But you could get it a lot lower expense.
I don't think it's all small cap either. It looks like, you know, it's got United Health, Microsoft, Best Buy, Ross Stores. It's not. Yeah. It focuses on stocks that are lower priced.
Right. Yeah. The byproduct of it is it tends to be small cap. It's not small cap by design.
Right.
You know? But yes, you are correct. Is that something we'd like to explore further in this conversation or the next quarter? Or you know, I could surely come back to you with some ideas and specific funds to
yes,
look
if
at.
If you could, and definitely explore it next quarter because we'll have to take a vote on changing it. But
yeah
it would be nice to look at a history and see where we would have been and
where we go. And just the trade-off between the two. But okay. Okay, any questions about any, I apologize that normally we get this out about a week ahead of time by email. We've been working actually with the state trying to pin down some issues, and actually in a moment we'll talk about the OPEB with Wilmington Trust on some fee issues with them, and that's why it's just got out. You know, normally you'll have a little bit more time to look through this ahead of time. Feel free, though, if you've got questions afterwards, you know, give me a call. Glad to answer them for you. Or I'll stay around also. Okay. In the attached, in the clip pages, you just see an update. The first page is for the pension fund through the end of April. So total fund increased by an additional pension fund by 0.3%. You can see the performance of each of those. You can see Fidelity, although down a lot less than their index. Okay. I'm not touting them over somebody else. Just I want you to be cognizant if you make a change. This is the trade-off you look at. Yeah. Okay. So 0.3 for the state, 0.3 for the composite. Okay. Do we want to deal with the IPS for the pension, or do you want me to do a performance report on the OPEB and then go to the IPS?
We'll stick with the agenda. Let's do the keep going with this and then go back to the investment policy statement.
So on the OPEB fund, quarter gain was $176,000. 1 year was 2.9 million net. That's net of investment management fees. The return for the first quarter was 0.6%, gross and net. It's rounded. There is some fees in there, but because the fees are much lower here, when you round it, they both round at 0.6%. In the year, 11.3 and 11 gross and net. Portfolio changes, as you recall, I come to you and said, look, really would like to see you make a lot of changes here. That was all implemented in mid-January. So you're going to see it, I'll call it tale of two stories. You know, January was not a good month on a relative basis for you. And then you'll see after those changes you implemented, it's been very strong. In fact, February and March, you had a 3% return. Okay. What were the drags on the performance? The large cash holdings, okay, which we've talked about some. The pre-change returns, so the managers you had before those changes got in place, because it didn't start at the very beginning of the quarter. And the Wilmington Trust trades. And let me take a moment about that. So I'll tell you the bad news that's become good news. So when you made the changes, and it was quite a significant number of changes, reflecting the report, Wilmington Trust, when they sold the mutual funds, they got simultaneous orders, a buy and sell, okay? So instead of selling out and buying simultaneously so that you weren't out of the market, which custodian banks do nowadays, they didn't do, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, they sold all the equities, they waited till the cash came in the next day, and then bought the new buys. Well, the market went up by about 75 basis points that day. That cost the plan about $58,000. When we look through this, and I, you know, we have other clients who have very similar, you know, structure, what we call a conservative 60% equities, and they on average did about 1.4% for the quarter. And I was like, I went back to the guy, the analyst. I said, hey, find out what caused this drag. Well, there were three things. One was larger cash holdings. One was because of the funds you had. But this was about 20 basis points of return differential. So I said, I went back to Wilmington Trust. I said, look, they're custodians on two other accounts. M&T, who owns them, are custodians on three others. I said, look, all these other ones, they buy and sell mutual funds same day so that you're not out of the market. You know, that's industry standard nowadays. Much to their credit, I talked to Nick Adams there. He pulled in others and blah, blah, blah. Basically, $58,000 they're going to put back into the plan. They said, you know, their fault, shouldn't have happened that way. And they said probably about the first week of June, they're going to cut a check, put it in the plan. But it had to work its way up through the hierarchy and the right way to do that. But they've stepped up to the plate and are doing the right thing. So the 20 basis points drag you saw in the first quarter, you're going to see a 20 basis point bump this quarter because of the money they're putting in, okay? Looking ahead, cash flow management, we've talked about that, all right? So what we want to do is stay with the same approach that you're doing, but the investment policy statement will want to build in the cash and actually a little higher cash because the cash in that one is a percentage of the overall is greater than it is in the pension, okay? And then the IPS, when you are targeted for 12% international equities, okay? We had said that when we put our recommendations together, we were suggesting that we wanted to go to 14% international as a target, not as a timing, but we thought on a portfolio that's 60% equities, that 14% international would be more appropriate. Basically 46-14, roughly 80-20 split between domestic and international. There was concurrence to do that, but there wasn't a change in investment policy to allow that. Still within the ranges that are permitted, but I'd also like to, once we get this investment policy done and put away, is just also make that change in the OPEB one to show that the target's going to be 14% for that, if you're in concurrent with that. Okay. I think just a couple pages I'll show you here, and we can wrap this up. Page 38 will show you all that occurred, and it was really in January, right around about the middle of January, all the changes. You can see that those funds that did not have any money in them at the beginning of the quarter and what they have now, the net cash flow was the amount of money that went into each of them. There were several that we got rid of altogether. And keep in mind, we do not have discretionary control of this. I mean, we can't make that decision and implement it. to come back with a specific recommendation to you saying, here's what we think you should do. It's different than the way it used to be. As you know, you're test driving this for a year. It's different than where we used to come back and say, well, here's three choices, analyze these three choices, so on and so forth. And then weekly, you're getting an update and looking at the rebalancing also. Okay, so those are all the changes that were implemented. Page 39, you see the asset allocations, that you're within target. You know, Nancy gets a, we send it to Gina.
Yeah.
Do we send it to Nancy also, or we send it to Gina?
Yeah, and I forward it to Nancy.
Okay, so Gina gets the reports from our office each Monday that says, you know, here's your overall, where it is. Because there hasn't been much difference between fixed and equity performance, there hasn't been a need to rebalance. But there are periods of times, sometimes last year, sometimes year before, with some of our clients, that if you get above or beyond, so if you get above 63% or below 57%, we're going to come back to you and say, we're recommending a rebalance. We're recommending, not because it's a tactical decision, it's because we want to keep you close to that 60, and say, and therefore, here's the funds we recommend you take it out of, here's the funds you put it into, and bring it back to your targets. You just haven't seen that so far today because the fixed and equity have done about the same. Okay. You can see the rankings are not good. That's why you're making the changes. Okay. Any other questions other than, actually, let me take you to the pages that were stapled together, I mean, clipped together. If you go to the one that says OPEB, it's the one that's in portrait. So this is showing the 1 month, the year to date. And also, I want to show you, you know, what the impact has been. We couldn't get it right on, you know, we started at the beginning of the month of February. As I mentioned that, you know, at least for those 3 months, 3.4% return. And you could see each of the individual funds and how they performed. We also gave you the third page. It's just up through the end of, I think it's Friday. It's the page. Got blue and white lines across it. It shows performance through May 16th, so you can see each one of the funds and how they've performed in your OPEB fund.
Okay. Sure. Do you have any concerns with any of these individual funds at this point? Like
Vance? Well, so I'll give you. So, Eaton Vance. So, I did for about a month, and then I look at how they've done this quarter, and they've done what we would expect them to do. When the market was down, so when I look at Eaton Vance, they were down 1.6, but the benchmark's down 3.5. That's the nature of them. They tend to be, you know, not as good in an up market, better in a down market. Now, you look at Thornburg, right now, you look and say, wow, up 8% for the year. It's absolutely fabulous. They've had a wonderful five-year run. But I will also tell you, in 2008, they were down more than the average. So I'll go to my baseball analogies. You've got some singles, doubles, and home run hitters, maybe even a couple triples hitters in here also. So we've got some designed to do better in up markets, some designed to do better in the down markets. Okay, so Eaton Vance, I can tell you, we meet every Monday at 9:30, the investment committee, and I'm going, guys, man, I know Eaton Vance has been great, but terrible this year. And everybody said, Michael, just be patient. And then I look at this quarter, and they've outperformed the benchmark by 200 basis points. So,
is that column heading right? The year-to-date return, should that, it says 1.1 to 2.14 on my sheet?
It should not say 2.14. That should say 5.16.
5.16, good. Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
I didn't. So somebody did it, somebody proofed it, and we still didn't catch it.
Okay.
But, yeah, no, it is 5.16.
Thanks.
The Wilmington Trust fixed income bonds, they're all relatively short term. Are they? I can't remember what.
Is that, yeah, so that is, yeah. So it is benchmarked to the intermediate government index. So it's basically from 1 to 5 year in maturity. And it's got treasuries, govies, you know, agencies. It's got a little bit of corporates, but it's very, it's not only short, fairly short maturity duration, but it's also very high credit quality too. Really, I'd say of all of our clients, it's the highest credit quality. Just always know, you give up some return, you know, and that's, that could be okay. You give up some return by sticking at very high credit quality, okay? That's, you know, but that's my opinion. That's who you are, and that's, you'd feel more concerned, at least more comfortable of being erring on the side of being cautious and judicious than trying to run for more returns. At least that's the feedback I've gotten over the years.
There's a place I can get more information on what the holdings are in those?
Yes, if you go, actually, within the report itself, you go to okay, all the way in the back, the last two pages, okay, we don't show in here the individual bonds, but we do give you, you know, the credit qualities, you know, the sector allocations, the characteristics, you have the maturity and all that.
On page 75, are you looking at, is that the page I'm supposed to be
Yes.
On? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. And the same page on the pension side at the very back, you'll see just about this, actually it's not the very, it's page 27 and 28.
And Wilmington Trust makes those decisions independently of the committee, or we give them feedback on what we want, or how does that work?
So there's a written investment policy statement.
Separately for Wilmington Trust?
Separately for Wilmington Trust. Well, actually, there's a written investment policy statement for the whole plan. Then there's a contract with Wilmington Trust, and the contract in there has investment guidelines.
Okay.
And those investment guidelines are different than they are for the pension because they are more conservative, you know.
I'm wondering if they would, I'm just kind of talking, but if, I wonder if it would make sense to look at like some high quality corporate, maybe even a little shorter than 5 years. I guess I'm just a little concerned about if interest rates do go up, that we, you know, face some interest rate risk and you lose a little return, of course, when it's shorter, but I'm wondering if we went to like some double A corporate shorter term, replace maybe some 5 years or something.
Yeah.
I don't know what we have on 5 year, 4 or 5 year term treasuries.
Yeah. Well, I would say, I mean, your duration of your portfolio is fairly short anyway. I mean, if you want to go shorter, you can go shorter. But what you'd have to do is, since they manage the so two options you could have. One is there, you could peel some away from them, and there are some short term index funds that you can get at Vanguard. I mean, there's short-term corporate, there's short-term treasury, there's short-term across all sectors. So I would say that would be more likely I'd want to think about it, but I think that's probably how I would play it, is peel a little bit away from them and just go. Because if you go to them and say, well, right now you've given them the direction, it's their job to pick what they think within the bands of what they're permitted. I don't think you go to a manager and say, well, we think interest rates are going to go down, so we want you to change your direction. And say, well, you didn't hire us to do that. We're, you know, speaking out loud, I want to think a little bit more about it, but I say I'd be more apt to peel a little bit away from them and go to some fund that maybe at Vanguard with a piece of it, you know. You know, the trade-off is, obviously, the yield curve is very, very, very sharply upward sloping. So if you stay on the short end, the good side is you better protect yourself in a rising interest rate environment. You also give up some yield. So what's that right mix? You know, long term, yes, I do think interest rates are going to go up. It's just how fast and how long, and you know, what's it going to top out at. So I can bring some ideas on that at the next meeting also, if that's.
Yes, please.
The committee, you like to see that? Promises. Nancy will take care of me. Okay.
Had the committee considered other lower term, I mean, lower rated bonds like high yields or mortgage backs or floating rates or bank loans or anything like that? Or is that not, is that completely off the table?
I think we have some in the Delaware, well, that's not an OPEB, but in the Delaware fund through their active management. But I don't think we ever really got into that too much. It certainly is something that could be considered, you know, it's a, to weigh that there's additional credit risk. But if you keep it real short, you kind of limit your credit issues. I mean, maybe that's something you could look at, too. Yeah. I don't know.
So here's my observation, is that I'd say on a spectrum of conservative to aggressive, I'm moderate to conservative. And in my dealings with Sussex County over the years, it's much more conservative than so my original recommendation back in 2007 was to use the Intermediate Government Credit Index. And I think collectively, at least at that time and since that time, is they thought that was too much exposure to corporates, okay? Which, is my opinion, it's not that much exposure to corporates, but and really went to look at treasuries and agencies. Over the last year or two, they've widened that out a little bit more to allow a little bit more into corporates. So the leap then to say high yield would have been. Yeah.
Understood. I'm just the new person asking the questions.
I think they're very good questions. I will tell you, as a firm, you know, we struggle with this issue a lot for our clients because, you know, as I mentioned earlier on, everybody is going to be very hard pressed over the next 10 years to get 7.5% return. I don't think it's doable. Okay. Now that's different than an actuarial assumed rate of return, which is a 40-year assumed rate of return. Okay. But over the next 10 years, it's going to be very difficult. Because of fixed income. So what do you do? You can, I'll say, reach some for more yield, but you want to make sure you don't reach too far. And so how do you do that? You know, some of our clients do have some, you know, some managers who they're allowed to have, you know, say 10% of their portfolio in high yield, you know, and maybe another 10 in emerging market debt, you know. So it's not a lot, but to get a little additional juice. I mean, what I could do is come back and just, I'll call it from an educational perspective. Say, look, here are some things that are out there that at least you should be cognizant of. You may elect not to do them. You may elect to do them. You may elect something in between. But at least from an educational perspective, you've been made aware of them, and then you can make a conscious decision to do or not do. And, you know, so. Next meeting.
I sound, it's going to be pretty long.
Okay, so education.
Sorry.
These are great questions, and I think they're things that absolutely, you know, in today's world, it's like, so what do you do? How do you try to get more returns, but you don't take on more risk or don't take on too much additional risk?
I just see in my practice how my fixed income portfolios for my own individual clients have evolved over the last 5 years from all AAA high-quality U.S. government to stretching for yield and just taking a little bit more on the credit quality end in order to make that happen. So,
now, one of the things that we'll show you as part of that is what you do is take on also more equity premium risk with that because those types of securities will correlate more highly with equities than treasuries and agencies will. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the trade-off that needs to look at it. And so that's a reason, one of the reasons why you get a higher return. You know, they're going to be more tied to what the economy does. You know, if we all know what the economy is going to do in the next 5 years, it'd be golden.
So. I wonder if the county needed to borrow any money for a sewer project or something, maybe they could. That would be something. Is it comparable to what you would get on the market?
Right. Yeah. You know, why lose on the spread? You know, I mean, that's why if you borrow at one rate and you're investing at a lower rate, you know, why lose on that spread? So. That's all I got. Scott for doing that. Unless you want me to talk more, John. You good?
I think everybody.
You good?
Okay, we're good. Okay, the next item on the agenda is the Employee Pension Plan Investment Policy Statement. This statement hasn't been updated since 2007, and we are updating, making, you know, simple changes as grammatical errors, add some more clarification, update the language to reflect industry standards, and to bring it more in line with our OPEB, which was changed, amended in 2012. And it was attached behind your agenda. There's a copy there. I'll turn it back over to Mr. Schoen to go through the recommended changes. I know a lot of them are grammatical, but
yeah.
So more of a high level.
Yeah. So some of it, so about every 3 or 4 years, we go back and revamp our template for our clients. And quite frankly, like lawyers, you know, our template is going to be about 80% the same for everybody, especially the guts, the legal components of it and things like that. What's different is, you know, your asset allocation mix, the permissible investments, the non-permissible investments, targets and things like that, okay? There's a marked up version, you know, a lot of it's grammatical. We also actually we hire a law firm then legally, because this is a legal document, we want them to look at and make sure it's up to those current standards. You know, you see a lot of things that are just, you know, some of it's grammatical, some's just moving some words around, but on page 4 of the marked up version, we've put in there, you know, this standard of care provisions, which deal with prudence, ethics, and conflicts of interest, delegation of authority, and I'll just hit on that. Sounds like a delegation of authority. What's that mean? You, in essence, have delegated the authority to the investment managers, okay, State of Delaware, DuPont, the mutual fund companies, to pick the individual securities, okay? To some degree, that gives you some level of protection, okay? But our lawyer said, you really should put that in the investment policy statement that you have delegated that authority to them. So this is another step from a legal perspective in there. We put in the responsibilities of the committee and the staff. We've also put in there, you know, about the investment consultant. And then another thing that we've done with these is because you had domestic equities, international equities, and fixed income, we laid out things that were common to all three in each of those sections. And we thought, why, if it's common to all three, can't we pull that out? Just put that under general guidelines because it pertains to any of those three areas, okay, and help make this 18-page document 17 pages instead. We also pulled out where there's, if you go to page 11 of the marked up, okay, you see in the body of that, you know, it laid out what the asset allocation mix and the targets, you know, the targets, the minimums, and maximums were. We've pulled that out and put it as a back page, as an attachment. And the reason is we have just found over time the thing that gets changed the most with our clients is this page. So if you're changing that page, well, why not stick it onto the back of it, and then you can just change the attachment instead of changing the body of that each time, and then say, okay, do I have the most recent one or not? And you'll also see that if you go all the way back to page 23, which is the very last page, this is of the marked up version, we actually did put in there a place for cash. Okay, your old one didn't have cash allocated, it was just straight fixed income. Okay. It doesn't change your targets. Your targets are 60% equities, 40% fixed income, but we're just splitting out that piece to recognize that the reality is you do carry cash, you know. And why we pick two is when you put the money in, you're usually up to about 4 or 5%. During the course of the year, you drain it down to zero, so it averages out at two. Any questions? Any greater detail you'd like to know? Is that sufficient?
One question.
Sure.
Or maybe a couple questions, but on that final page, on the attachment, mm-hmm. the what's missing for me here is the overall intention, investment policy intention, the 60-40 that you mentioned.
Uh-huh.
Now, maybe it's in there because the state pool's allocation is what it is, and if you take those allocations and add it to the 24% equities and 16% fixed income, you'd get to 60-40. But I'm wondering if there should be, whether that should be more explicit, that the overall allocation by policy intention is 60-40. I don't know if that's, it seems to me like that would be a clearer statement of intention. And if the Delaware State Pool's allocations change, we'd want to, that would be a trigger then automatically to look at our other allocations.
Okay. So first I'll say, in the OPEB, it does. It's a state piece that made this more difficult to write.
Yes.
Okay. I guess the question would be, let's say if the state has its targets, which are 60-40, but they will make some pretty distinct, I hate to use the word bets, but decisions, to go over or under that. So one of the questions, let's say if the state's depends how you categorize hedge funds, but let's just say they're about 70-75% equities right now. Do you say, okay, therefore, at this moment in time, we should allocate more to fixed income, but then you're always chasing what the state does, which could change. Or do you say, we know their target's 60-40, everything that's not with the state is going to be 60-40, okay? And if the state happens to be over, well, then you're going to be over at that moment in time. I think it would be difficult to, literally every month or every quarter, I say, state, where are you? Well, we can tell you where we were. We might change a month from now. We'd be chasing that forever, trying to match up with them so that you offset it,
Right. I guess maybe I'm not being clear. The attachment says that our target is not 60-40 equities versus fixed income. Our target is 24 equities and 16 fixed income, mm-hmm. and 60% with the state, whatever the state might be.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if that's what we intend to say, okay. Mm-hmm. But I think what we miss when we do that is we miss our overall intention, mm-hmm. which is 60-40. This sort of says if the state decides at some point in time in the future to become 50-50 or 40-60, we're going to be fine with that because it's going to fall within this attachment target.
So if the state, sorry, good question. If the state decides to go say 40-60, right. Are you saying on a tactical basis because they want to underweight equities, or are you saying that as a policy they go 40-60?
Both.
So I would say if they tactically do that, I'd say then just let that happen. They're an active manager for you who are going to make some tactical decisions. Just let that happen. If they were to change their targets, then you would want to change your target. Assuming you want to stay at 60-40, you would change your targets. Let's say, I think the more likely scenario is the state might say, we've decided as a policy, we want to be 70% equities. Okay. If you still want to be 60, then we would readjust. We'd come back to you because we check with them, at least quarterly, what are your targets, where are things. If they came back and they changed theirs, then we'd come back and say, okay, then you want to change the rest of it from there. If that's sufficient.
Okay. Well, if the rest of the committee is fine, then I'm fine. I just thought we were missing a little bit of our overall intention in terms of allocation. When we phrased it this way. But if everyone's okay, I can certainly live with it.
Having said that, so let me just run by idea. What we could say, I have to think about where we'd want to put this, is say, like, It's the intention of the overall plan to have a targeted asset allocation of 60-40, okay? And if the state, and the allocation of the non-state assets will be done in order so that the target for the state plan and the rest of the assets would be at 60-40. I'll find a little better verbiage in that, but that's, I think that sort of...
That could be in attachment one, and that way
we
could... If the state, for instance, went to 70-30, and we sort of like that, I mean, we could all do that within attachment one without having to restate the body of the policy.
I live with it either way, the board, whether the committee likes.
I mean, adding it to attachment one, it would be easier to change. And I also don't have a problem on page, I guess it's our page 12, it might be your 11, where it says asset allocation.
Mm-hmm.
In that paragraph, it is the intent of the policy to have 60-40 in that paragraph with the attachment, you know, outlining it there as well, to clarify it.
Yeah, I won't give you the exact verbiage now, but if you want to approve everything subject to putting in something in like that, I actually think it's not a bad idea, you know,
okay,
the way I think about it. And if it's okay with you, I'll just think about whether on that page or this. One sense it should be exactly what you say it is. It might be easier just to do it in an attachment so that if it changed in the future, we can just change it to that page.
This looked like a really lot of good simplification to me. Are there any duties or powers of any significance whatever that are changing here? Or would you characterize these as housekeeping and presentation changes?
I'd call it housekeeping and presentation changes. It's not your authorities don't change, our authorities don't change, you know, council's authorities don't change.
On page 19, has section on fixed income investment guidelines.
And you look at the marked up version for the clean version.
Okay.
Which one?
The one where it says suitable fixed income investments include treasuries and so on. It has taxable municipal securities. I think normally that'd probably be the case, but I'm just wondering if we ought to exclude tax exempt if we, you know, as policy. Normally, we wouldn't invest in tax exempt because there's no tax benefit, but.
Okay, so don't put in the word taxable. So here's what my observation is. Generally, I mean, you don't want tax-free munis, okay? I will tell you, one investment manager came to us just a month ago for another client that we're doing IPS, and they said, right now we see some opportunities in the tax-frees. You know, it's just a moment in time. And I said, yeah, but still, if it's an opportunity and it's tax-free, it must have a different risk characteristic than the others, you know. Ultimately, what we did is we compromised and said, look, you can go up, not in here, but in the contract with the manager, allowing them to go up to 5% in tax-free munis. So I would say we might want to wait. If Wilmington Trust comes back and pushes and says they'd like to see that, maybe open up the door at that point. Yeah, because generally, under almost all circumstances, you don't want munis in a... There can be exceptions to that, but generally, I think you don't want munis in a pension fund, you know, tax-free
no,
munis.
Normally, you don't. It's just, right?
Yeah. If you're okay with that. We can easily change that, but my concern is we change it, we open up that door, and then the markets change. Are any of us going to go back and say, oh, now's the time to strike out, you know, tax-frees?
Yeah.
I'd rather have the manager come in and fight that fight if they want to, and then we can listen. The state, you don't have control over anyway, and there's language in here that basically says the state will do what the state will do, and you're okay with that.
On the policy today?
Yes, I am. This was handed out at two pension meetings ago, which was about 6 months, so hopefully you had time to review it. And if you have any other questions or suggestions, I'm looking for a motion to adopt the recommended changes with one change of adding a little more clarification to the asset allocation, stating the 60-40% allocation.
Yeah, the intent of the overall plan being
set. Yes. Sure.
You're comfortable with it, Gene?
I am.
I would so move.
Okay. Second. I have a motion and a second. We'll take a vote. Mr. James?
Yes.
Ms. Burlington?
Yes.
Ms. Ryan?
Yes.
Mr. Leahy?
Yes.
Mr. Baker?
Yes.
Mr. Lawson?
Yes.
And I vote yes. Motion passed. Thank you. And the last item on the agenda is additional business. Does anybody have anything to add?
Just a question. I guess I'm a little hazy on when rules change such that the adequacy of pension funds becomes a more public and discussed item. Okay. Can you discuss that just a little bit, where we're moving and what $71 million does for us in the pension and so forth?
Sure. So you're talking about the public in the financial statements,
yes.
So when that comes up. It'll be effective this fiscal year 14, for the pension fund will be different reporting standards in the financial statements this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I am working with the actuary as we speak, working on those reports and what they will look like in the financial statements. And next quarter, I plan on bringing the actuary report to the pension committee so you can see how those look. He's looking at the new assumptions that have been put in place that we voted on a couple meetings ago, and that has improved. We're now closer in the 90s being funded versus the 80s. So the assumptions have worked well for us. So that's where we are. OPEB, that part of the pension, reporting standards, things like that don't change until 2017. So we have some time for the OPEB.
So they have come out with pronouncements. I thought OPEB hadn't even...
The pronouncements say 2017.
Oh, they were pronouncements.
Yeah,
Okay.
So we have some time.
The OPEB were about 70%.
It was 70% funded for the OPEB.
I know I've said this before, but I would say of all of our clients, you probably have the best funded plan out there on the pension side. And the OPEB, I can say categorically, you have the best funded. Most of our clients just started funding their OPEB last year, 2 years, you know. So, you know, a good OPEB funding is 20-25% right now. And you're way over 70, so... You know, as I've said to someone, if the assets aren't there, that promise may never be kept. If the assets are there, you're much more likely the promise will be kept.
Well, I just think, you know, knowing how conservative our community is, that my greatest fear is that if any number is published less than 100%, the first question is going to be, oh, you haven't funded your pension? I mean, that's going to be the immediate response. And so I think there are a lot of very strong arguments that we can bring to the table. While I'm thankful and appreciative for that, a lot of good work over many years, we'll just need to be really ready, because the initial reaction is going to be, if it's less than 100, it's going to be, that's just terrible. We haven't provided.
So I could, if you'd like, I could share, since I hear these things quite a bit elsewhere. A couple of responses we say, keep in mind that the liability takes in consideration future expected salary increases and years of service. People haven't earned those yet. So you don't pay in to cover all that right now, okay?
Another big point.
Okay. And the second point I would say, actuaries typically consider 80% or better a very well-funded plan because of what I've just said. And the third, sometimes I'll say to people is, do you have a mortgage on your home? Yes. So if you have a home that's worth $200,000 and you have a $40,000 mortgage, are you in good shape? Yeah. Okay. Well, it's 80% funded then, isn't it? So it depends who you're talking to and how you want to tell us. But yeah. But anyway, you know, some of those might resonate with people, you know, but especially the part about, you know, there's other pieces of the liability for somebody who's analytical enough to understand it, that they haven't earned that yet, so we haven't put the money away for that yet. So, sure.
Can you explain, or Todd explain, the proposed budget and the pension?
Sure. We are proposing contributing $5.3 million, which is above the required contribution, which is under $5 million. So we're about $300,000 more than what we need to fund, which is great. When I got the reports back from the actuary to how much we needed to, our required contribution actually had gone down because of the assumption. So what we're contributing is great. Is there anything else you want to add as far as?
That will maintain us in the 90s, or will that take us beyond the 90s?
That would take us beyond in the 90s. So the report isn't final yet, so I don't want to give the exact 90% as I'm working with the actuary, but it will only increase it is what it will do, because it'll maintain it if we do the actuary required contribution, but we're going to go above that in this budget.
Well, that opens a kind of can of worms in my mind. And if, I don't even know how to ask a question. If the audited report is going to say something less than 100%, but of all the rational arguments that we could bring to the table, say anything better than 80% is really great. The question is, why is 100% 100%? Why isn't 80% funded the target? And if it's the target, why would we go beyond it? You know, it's all these circular
it's
kinds
of questions. It's a circular
question.
That's right.
Why? Who came up with what the 100% level is if we think that 80% is, or 85 or 90%, pick a number, is really where we want to be?
And just when you when we change the assumptions, all of a sudden your percentage changes. So it's numbers and how you're viewing them every year. It does fluctuate. And
I think you're right. 100% is where we would like to be. The county's come a long way over time, and investments have helped a lot. Performance on investments has helped a lot, mm-hmm. And the county has contributed. Sometimes extra when they could afford to the funds, and that's helped. But when, like, over time with the budget and with the audit report, that has been a subject of public discussion. And I normally the actuary reports presented to the council, and that is explained right here in front of the press and anybody else who's interested, you know. So it's not, I know exactly what you're saying, because to the average person, if it's not 100% funded, then it sounds like it's not, you know, if the county closed up shop today, there'd be a little, you know, a partial liability out there, you know. But the county has been taking steps to increase its contributions, and even the base $5 million assumes that the county is going to make progress towards getting to the 100%.
I mean, it's not always the easiest thing to convey, but you know, people, you know, 2008 we had the worst economic and financial meltdown since the Great Depression. in just 5 years, you got your plan all, and everything went down. You know, markets went down 25%. Actually, stock markets went down 40%. Was the county going to come up with, at terrible economic time, come up with a difference? No. You take some time to make it back up. To be back where you are, almost fully funded in just 5 years, I think is quite outstanding, quite frankly.
Okay. Well, the communication challenge is to try to get people to understand that batting 333 is Hall of Fame numbers, but
yes,
that's only 2 out of 3 times that you're winning. Right. And so the same kind of communication, I wish it were so easy, but that kind of communication needs to surround why only 92%. That's terrible. Some people are going to react that way. Most laymen may well react that way. 92%, that's...
That's an A.
Yeah, that's fair. Well...
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I'd say, if you got a 92 on the exam, I would... Right. I know it's not quite the same, but it's still, right, you know, that's a good score. Might not be a perfect score. It's a pretty good score.
Or it could mean 8% of your employees won't get any pension that they've been promised. What if they look at it that way? Who are among the 8%? So it's, well, just a communications issue.
Yes.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
I have a motion and a second.
Second,
Mr. Maker. Okay, take the vote. Mr. James?
Yes.
Ms. Brewington?
Yes.
Ms. Ryan?
Yes.
Mr. Leahy?
Yes.
Mr. Baker?
Yes.
Mr. Lawson?
Yes.
And I vote yes. Meeting adjourned. Thank you.